Welcome back to Word and Table, a bi-weekly podcast on liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship, and why it is vital in our world today. I'm your host, Alex Wilgus, and I am here, as always, with Father Stephen Gauthier. Welcome back, Father Stephen.
Great to be back, Alex.
Father Stephen is the canon theologian of the Diocese of the Upper Midwest in the Anglican Church in North America, and he is director of formation at St. Paul's House of Formation in the Greenhouse Movement. And today, Father Stephen, you suggested that we talk about scandal in the church. And I thought, ooh, great, that's a spicy topic.
Anything for ratings.
Yeah. We got to get those clicks. But then we started talking about it, and I realized that I didn't actually mean by scandal what you meant by scandal. So before we get too ahead of ourselves, maybe you ought to explain what you are talking about when you say, let's talk about scandal.
That's a good point, because the word scandal, there are a lot of words in the New Testament that in their modern Greek, English equivalent of Greek words, that don't have the same meaning, that have substantially changed meaning or context. And what scandal is a key word. We think of scandal as a sense of outrage. That's scandalous. Of somebody getting angry and outraged over something. But the word scandal actually comes from a Greek word which means to trip, to fall. And the essence of scandal really isn't about outrage at all. It's actually sort of the opposite. Scandal is you do something that causes somebody else to follow your example to their hurt.
Okay.
So it's not that they're getting upset at all. That's the problem. Is they might say, well, I guess it is okay. And they might do something that they otherwise thought was, this might help with some theology.
Yeah. So we're not talking here about, you know, brazen acts of immorality that everyone goes, oh, that's awful. We're talking about something different, something more subtle, right?
Right. Especially I'm talking today in the context of 1 Corinthians, where we have some of the theology of this.
Okay.
Paul talks to us about it. But yeah, we're saying here that we should explain one theological point. Sin is deliberately doing anything that we know to be against the will of God, that we believe is against the will of God.
Okay.
If we believe God told us we can't do this and we do it anyway, we might be mistaken, but if we're persuaded in our hearts, in our conscience, that this is wrong, and we go ahead and do it anyway. Now, we have a duty to have a well-formed conscience. I'd love to have an episode on that. We should do more moral theology.
Yeah.
But the point is, if I am really persuaded that this is the right thing I need to, this is what God wants me to do, I'm persuaded in my conscience, and I do something else, I'm committing a sin. So the real problem with scandal is, this is what Paul's dealing with in 1 Corinthians, is what if we're in a situation where I know as a Christian, he calls them stronger brothers, they're better informed in the faith, that this is okay.
That some thing that you're doing is actually not sinful.
Yes, for a Christian saying in the light of Christ, this is okay now.
But other people think that it is sinful.
But somebody else really believes in their heart this would be sinful. And because I do this, they might follow my example. But unlike me, I know it's right. They think it's wrong.
But they even do it anyway.
Right. So the same act is very different for two people.
Hold on. Let me slow you down for just 1 second. So you're saying that even if something is not a sin, but someone thinks that it is a sin, and they do it even though they're convinced that it is a sin, they do it anyway.
Yes.
You're saying their doing of that actually turns into a sin. Right?
Yes.
Wow, I've never thought about it that way.
But that's what sin is. Sin is willfully disobey God.
To disobey God. So if you believe that God has told you can't do this and you do it anyway, then that ends up being sin.
It's sinful. So it's morally wrong.
So this is what Paul is concerned with in 1 Corinthians?
Yes.
Well, maybe you should explain the context of what is this practice that Paul is dealing with here.
Yeah, it's really an interesting situation. I think a lot of our listeners, they've seen this discussion in 1 Corinthians. It might leave them a little bit not really sure what's going on.
A little puzzled, yeah.
Here's the thing when they talk about food offered to idols.
Okay.
There are two separate issues that might really help to sort this out. First of all, religion in a traditional society permeates everything. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And so one of the challenges Christians had is, for example, some public celebrations were held in temples. And they'd have big meals and things in temples, etc. And they were quasi-religious celebrations. Like, you know, when we talk about the Agape Supper with Christians, we read about in 1 Corinthians, where Christians get together for Eucharist and they have a meal, like potluck.
So sort of pagans had their version of that.
They had
as
their
well.
Version, they offer public. And Paul tells us it's not right for us to participate in those. Going in a temple and participating in a quasi-religious ceremony, even though it has public and everyone's there, but the fact it's in a temple, it's with the idols, there are priests there doing their thing, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's a form of worship. But it was more than that. You see, in most societies, there's a sense that there's something special about taking life for food, like when you slaughter animals.
Uh-huh.
For example, people I know with Inuit peoples, for example, when you capture a seal or fish, a larger animal,
mm-hmm.
that you have to do something ritually. You have to offer something for the spirit of the animal.
Some kind of like ritual of gratitude.
There's always some ritual of gratitude or making things right with the spirit of the animal. This is very basic in animistic culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it means pagan religions, which come out of animism and things, they thought, anytime you take life, there was normally something religious thing you did in the process. It was just part of slaughtering, but you always did. It was one of those things you did.
Sort of like a kosher, kind of like a kosher butchery or something like that.
But there's that idea, but, uh-huh. That you'd always do this in any meat.
Yeah.
All meat was prepared this way. So in the ancient world, temples were sort of slaughterhouses. You'd have all the meat was slaughtered there for ritual purposes, but then it was just regular meat. It would just be sold in the marketplace.
Okay, so you would just go pick it up at the grocery store.
Find it at your Piggly Wiggly, so to speak, your ancient version of Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah.
There, but it was just meat there.
Uh-huh.
So the issue became, some people had problems, say, well, can't we go to these public celebrations and temples? And Paul said, no.
Uh-huh.
But people said, well, what about
this meat came through.
Yeah, we know what's in the process, but it's just on the meat market.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Can I eat that or not? Now, some people said, who called themselves the stronger, the brethren, they said, well, we know an idol isn't anything. This is, idols are nothing. They're just statues. They're void. They have no power.
Sure.
So they said, what harm does it if something's been passed in front of this?
So it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Other people said, wait a second, there still was a pagan ritual over this. I think this would be wrong. So the question is, was it right? So the big issue here, the first issue, we have an agreement on. That's clear that being in a, although some people had trouble because it meant you couldn't go to a lot of public celebrations,
their
version of the 4th of July type of thing.
But everyone agreed. No temple rituals.
Yeah, the temple ritual. Or Paul had to remind people that's wrong.
Yeah,
you just can't. Or Dan, he said you just can't be in a temple, particularly mm-hmm. in a quasi-religious ceremony, sort of their version, like a church potluck, but there was like more like an agape.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes, what about this stuff that's just, this is how meat is processed.
Right.
I'm just going to the meat market, to buy some meat. Does that mean I can't eat it? And so Paul agrees, and he said, theologically, it's true an idol isn't anything. He said, you're right, I agree with you. An idol isn't anything. It doesn't change the meat that somebody passes it in front. After all, how would ever even know that happened?
Yeah, yeah.
How do we know what happened to that meat before we get it?
Sure.
There was no, what's the FDA or something?
Okay.
There was no FDA, checking those slaughterhouses.
No expiration date or anything like that? Okay. So it's basically, if it's on the market out there, just eat it. Don't ask questions.
Yeah. He said don't ask questions. But there was a bigger issue. And the bigger issue is there are a lot of people who weren't to that point yet. It really bothered them that for them, I think I would be participating in a pagan sacrifice.
Hmm.
They weren't at that point yet. They say, this is really, this has been in a pagan temple. I know it's been in a pagan temple. It's been offered to a statue. It represents one of these gods. I think it would be wrong.
Yeah.
And let's hear what Paul basically says. He said, look, he says, knowledge puffs up. You're great in theology maybe, but love builds up. And he said, what builds up the church? He said, he said, Christ died for these people. And he said, I know if they actually eat this meat, that it's going to be a sin because they think it's wrong. So I'm going to limit my freedom. He said, the right thing to do is out of love. My fear is that if I eat it, they'll eat it too, but for different reasons. I know it's okay.
Yeah.
They don't. So even though it looks like the same thing, they really would be violating that rule. And he says, that's wrong.
So he has a real caring. This is a real care and concern for these people who might be theologically incorrect.
And they're trying to honor God.
They're trying to honor God. So he's like, this is my first duty to help you do that. It's not to live in the way that my conscience says is fine in front of you so that you might go against what you believe to be true.
The danger of scandal, he said, is that they would do it. That we'd have somebody doing something.
Right.
They think to be wrong.
I see. Okay.
So that's the danger. It's not the fact they disapprove of what I do.
Uh-huh.
It's the fact there's a risk that they would do something they deem to be wrong.
Per tua semina.
because they're making a real sacrifice here, you know, and it's like,
oh, no pun intended.
I'd really like to have some meat, you know, but I really know it's wrong. But this Paul guy's doing it, so I'm just
maybe it's okay.
Yeah,
it might be before they've gotten there. You know, Paul, I guess it must be okay, but they're not really persuaded yet. They're not really persuaded in their hearts.
So that would actually be causing them to sin, causing them to stumble. Fascinating.
Yeah. His whole concern was that if I get them to do something they think is morally wrong, they will be committing a sin. Uh-huh. He said, I'd rather go without. He said, I'd rather never eat meat again if that came down to it, rather than cause a brother to sin.
So his message to those, the stronger brothers, quote unquote, would be like, you know, don't go around living in this way because you think all these other people are dumb, and, you know, don't be puffed up with this knowledge, you know, use it in the right way.
Right. He said, he says, for example, why should my liberty be determined by someone else's conscience? What he says very specifically is saying, my only concern, because there are two different types of people here. Mm-hmm. Scandal only means the risk is that they will violate their conscience.
Yeah.
They're not upset because you're doing something different. That's not the issue. That'd be limiting. You know, they might actually do it wrongly.
Okay. Okay, so I see. So there's this. So basically, this is kind of an issue of who's being the more aggressive with their conscience here. Is it the people that are fine with meat sacrificed to idols, but they're not building up their weaker brethren? Or is it people who believe that meat sacrificed to idols is wrong, and they're saying, I disapprove of you doing that?
Those are very different things.
Two very different things. Okay.
Well, let me give you an example in more things we'd understand. Let's suppose we have alcohol as a classic case. Mm-hmm. In the South, there are many good Christian people who have moral objections to using any type of alcohol.
Yep, it's my upbringing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
As Anglicans, we don't share that. That per se, alcohol, there's nothing wrong per se with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So let's suppose I'm at a dinner with some people, okay, and I'm there. And I know there's nothing wrong per se with having a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are ordering beers, but I know there's somebody next to me that they think it's wrong. They have a good Baptist home, and they really believe in their heart that it's wrong to do this. But they're also socially embarrassed to be the only one at the table not having a beer or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let's say the other people aren't Christians. We're the two Christians there.
Okay.
And so I have to say, wait a second. If I have that beer, I know him well enough to realize the social thing of being the only guy there not with a beer.
Right.
He's probably going to go ahead and have
one. He's under this pressure.
Even though he knows it's wrong, you know, he thinks, well, if it's good enough for him, maybe it is okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But he wouldn't really be persuaded.
I see.
And so the right thing for me out of love is I don't want to ever put him in that position.
Okay.
If you're doing this for God, then I'll be right there with you.
I'm not going to
put you on the spot. Now, a different thing would be something like this. We're at a table with people, and the person with me is another Christian, but he really, there's no danger he would drink. I mean, he'd rather be disemboweled or run over by a train than have a drink. He's really, really solid on this. And so there's no danger he's going to do anything wrong. But I told him theologically I don't agree, and everyone's having a beer. I'm not bound because of his limitations.
So if you have a beer and he is sort of visibly disapproving of you.
I said, that's a right for a Christian to have a beer.
Okay.
And I've explained, I'm sorry.
So he's kind of putting his conscience over yours, and he's saying, I disapprove.
And Paul says, why should my liberty be determined by someone else's conscience?
Yeah,
so the whole thing, Paul is saying, it's all about love. It's not about being bullied. And actually, Alex, we have a great example of how this works in Scripture. With talk about heavy hitters, Peter and Paul come to loggerheads over this in a very clarifying example.
Okay.
It's in Galatians.
Uh-huh.
And here's what happens in Galatians. It's in Galatians chapter 2. And what happened is, in the church at Antioch, is it was a mixed church. There were Gentiles and Jews. And what a lot of our listeners might not realize, it's mentioned specifically in Acts of the Apostles. We all know that Jews have special foods, kosher foods and things, but we all have Jewish friends, I'm sure, that we've eaten with, and they can eat kosher at the same table with us, right? They can have their food, and we have our food. That's not a problem. It wasn't true at the time of the New Testament.
Okay.
At the time of the New Testament, if you were a Jew, you couldn't eat at the same table with Gentiles.
I see.
You couldn't share a meal, even with your own food.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't eat with them. Now, it doesn't matter what you eat. You could not eat with them.
Okay.
They tell us that in Acts of the Apostles. They actually make that statement here. This is one of the reasons, by the way, like in the New Testament, we're forever running into people who are called the devout.
Huh.
And the devout was a category people believed in the God of the Bible. But they weren't ready to become Jews. Why? Well, they'd have to be circumcised. But the second thing was eating. They could never eat with their family again. They could never have a meal with their family again.
Okay. I see.
And so this was a big thing. So, well, Peter had the correct teaching. He understood that Gentile Christians weren't bound by that, and that Christians and Jews should eat together.
Yeah.
And so when he would go to Antioch, he would eat, everybody ate together. But a group of people who really believed in following the traditional Jewish approach were Jewish. We believe in the Messiah, Yeshua. Uh-huh. But they didn't believe, you know, that we have to absolutely follow the law strictly.
Let's adhere to.
So when they came to Antioch, they thought it was a scandal. What do you mean? What are you eating with these people?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when they came, Peter pretended he didn't do that.
Okay.
He started all the Jews there. They all did. They said, oh, these people are coming. I know they disapproved. They don't know we're doing this. What we'll do is when they're here, let's eat at separate tables.
We'll just not eat with Gentiles.
Yeah. We'll eat separately. So Paul comes and sees people eating separate and says, what's going on here?
Yeah.
He said, I confronted him face to face and said, you know, and this is sort of embarrassing because he basically gave away the game. The people who came didn't realize that Peter did normally eat with Gentiles.
Okay. So
he actually says, hey, I don't get it. If you, a Jew who eat with Gentiles, you know, see, guys, he does normally.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What's going on here? And so what he says very specifically, he says, well, let me read the passage now in that context.
Sure.
When Cephas, by the way, is just the Aramaic name. It means rock in Aramaic, like Peter. Petros means rock in Greek, so mm-hmm. they give it this Aramaic. When Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he was eating with the Gentiles. I explained that, right? But when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. Right? So now they're going to pretend they don't do that.
Hmm.
And the rest of the Jews, yeah, all the other Jewish Christians there who had been eating together, acted hypocritically. Right? Hypocritically, they normally ate with them. They normally did the right thing, but they didn't want to, quote, get into a fight.
Yeah.
And these people wouldn't approve. And believe me, there was no danger they were going to eat.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was not a danger that they were going to do something wrong.
Right, right.
But when I saw the conduct was not in step with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas before everybody, if you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile, see, he's giving up the game, you live like a Gentile and not like a Jew, how can you force the Gentiles to live like Jews? So he's basically saying, hey, guys, this guy lives like everybody else. They right. all do. This is wrong.
Sure, sure. So don't be, Peter is letting himself be intimidated
yes.
by the consciences of these. Of
right, so the point yeah. is if he had done this, if their real fear had been, you know, they might actually eat at the same table with us, and while they still really believe it's morally wrong, Paul probably would have been the other table with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But this wasn't a matter of weakness. This is a matter of people who came because they heard bad things were going on. They were going to set things straight.
Got it.
So there was no danger of their conscience being violated. They were there to bully other people's conscience. And that's where Paul says, why should my liberty be determined so, and also be denied the truth of the gospel? It's one thing to honor, like at that table I'm telling you about. I will honor the fact that someone's honoring God by not drinking any alcohol or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I will not, you know, I can't in good faith say somehow the New Testament prohibits alcohol.
Somehow teach this.
That's not true.
Proclaim it to be true if you don't believe it's true.
I cannot proclaim it to be true. That's not what the Bible teaches.
Right, right.
It's a wonder what you're trying to do is a wonderful thing. But that is not the Bible teaches you can't drink a drop of alcohol.
I see. It's a very subtle distinction, Stephen, mm-hmm. between your conscience and the formation of your conscience,
yes.
or the knowledge that leads to you to bring your behavior in line to the truth. It's just the idea that we need to preserve people's, we need to help build up people's practice, even though they might not be at a full place of understanding.
That's right. We don't want to shock people in a way that's harmful to them, and not in the sense that they're offended, that they're angry with us. But in the sense that they might actually get to a place, like when I teach our sacramentals and things,
mm-hmm.
I tell people, you know, don't make a sign of the cross until you really feel good about it.
Sure, sure.
You know, I mean, the idea that if you really think that if you haven't come to that point yet,
right.
well, then you shouldn't do it.
If you're really offended by praying with the saints, then don't do that. You
That's
know?
Why we say all may, some should, none must.
Right, right.
Because we want to honor people's consciences, but in the sense that we still try to form them.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is we certainly would not want to encourage somebody to do something that they truly believe in their heart is not what God would have them do.
Man, I got to say, Stephen, that's an idea that I have not, I mean, it's right there in the Bible, but I've just not heard that much. Like I'm failing to come up with the exact context in which I feel like I should have heard it, but you know, I feel like the knee jerk reaction to things is like, well, if you're doing something that isn't right, you know, or if you think something is wrong that is actually right, then you must be dumb and uninformed, and I shouldn't have any duty or responsibility to you at all. That seems to be the attitude. Well, but that's not Paul's attitude.
Well, actually, it's not ours if we really think about it.
Uh-huh.
Imagine that somebody thought that by pulling a switch, he'd be electrocuting somebody.
Uh-huh.
He really believed that he was doing that.
Uh-huh.
And what we know is that electricity's off.
Yeah.
What, would he be morally guilty? He didn't kill anybody.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The switch isn't even connected. He's wrong about it. The switch that doesn't, it's not, that's not an electric chair or something. I know it's a silly, but you have the idea. No one would question, excuse me, he's trying to kill, he thinks he's killing someone.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's doing it. It's the same principle.
Yeah.
I believe in my heart, you know, the person in the old form, that God has said this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply morally wrong, a serious morally wrong thing. And I'm going to do it anyway. It's like pulling that. I think it's a switch to an electric chair, and actually, no, it's you know, it's not a switch to anything. You know, it's
yeah.
I would still the act, the moral act, would be sure. My intention.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. That's why Jesus says it's you know, it's you know, a man who even looks at a woman with lust. You don't have to actually commit adultery. The Pharisees, by argued the opposite. They said you don't commit adultery until you commit adultery.
Yeah, it's just an idea that we haven't. I don't feel like is brought up enough.
Well, we certainly don't want people to morally to do things that they really are persuaded. Or now, being a little bit uncomfortable and saying I'm not used to something, like when people, that's one thing. But when I really am persuaded, this is wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
We shouldn't do things we're persuaded with. What we need to do is inform our conscience and find out and make sure what do the scriptures say? Yeah. You know, but that's
really
one thing.
Really seek the truth. Yeah.
But the idea of just going around and violating our conscience is a gift from God. We need to honor it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, anything else you'd have for us on scandal, Father Stephen?
Well, I think, you know, we started out, as you point out, the word scandal has other meanings, like scandals in the church.
Right,
what
right.
happens when a pastor's doing something. I think we need to talk about it. I think it's a different context, though.
I see. Because when I think scandal, I think, okay, someone in leadership has a serious moral failing, and it gets out there, and everyone hears about it and is shocked.
Or should we cover up a moral failing for fear that people might?
Right, right. How do we deal with all that?
And that's a very important issue, but it's a different issue from the biblical idea of scandal. It's wrong in things, but we'll find out the reasoning is different.
I see.
So scandal, when we're talking about with Paul, and Jesus, when he talks about scandal, caused one of these little ones to fall, is what he says. You know, again, the Greek word is to fall, to trip up.
I see. Okay, so that's a different issue that we should have another episode on.
Yeah, I think so.
Great. That sounds like a good idea. Well, to be continued. Well, thank you so much, Father Stephen. That's all the time we have left for this episode. And thank you for listening to Word and Table. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with more on liturgy, sacraments, and the great tradition of Christian worship. Thanks for listening.